Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Hello and welcome to SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Justin Drewer, on behalf of the Faculty Division of the Federalist Society. We're here today to discuss Arizona v. Navajo Nation and Department of Interior v. Navajo Nation, which were argued before the court on March 20th. It's my honor to introduce our guest today, Tom Getty. He is counsel at Morgan Lewis & Brockius LLP and assists the Indian law practice and previously taught as an adjunct professor of federal Indian and gaming law at the University of the Pacific McGeorge School of Law. He is a member and advisor to the Restatement of American Indian Law at the American Law Institute, and was also appointed by then Minority Leader John Boehner as a member of the 9-member federal commission called the Indian Law and Order Commission that reviewed public safety in Indian country and reported to the President and Congress. We're very happy to have him on SCOTUScast today. So Tom, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Justin, and thanks to the Federalist Society for providing for these very important podcasts. Today, I will discuss the two cases consolidated for briefing and oral argument held on the 20th of March, and I will generally refer to them as Arizona versus Navajo Nation, even though the case involves the suit brought by the Navajo Nation against the Department of Interior. No need to dwell on the consolidation. This seems to me to be a case where the court is overly struggling over what likely will go back to the district court and then may well come back to the Supreme Court. Of course, the court may issue an opinion that thoroughly resolves the issues, but I still think this may be the first of several runs to the court. The court examined the Ninth Circuit's review and reversal of a grant of a motion to dismiss the Navajo Nation's claim that the United States breached its trust obligation to the nation for failure to consider the nation's as yet undetermined water rights in the Colorado River. The district court dismissal followed on remand. The nation's move for leave to file a third amended complaint alleging a breach of trust, as well as violations of the two treaties. After this was denied, the nation moved to file a modified complaint alleging a single cause of action for breach of trust, which was dismissed as futile. The district court held it lacked jurisdiction to decide the claim because the Supreme Court reserved jurisdiction over allocation of rights to the Colorado River in Arizona versus California, or Arizona 1. The Court of Appeals reversed, holding the nation's complaint doesn't seek a judicial quantification of rights to the Colorado River, and that the complaint properly stated a breach of trust claim. That claim, the Court of Appeals held, was premised on the nation's treaties with the United States and the nation's federally reserved rights to a pertinent water needed to accomplish the purposes of the reservation, called winter's rights, especially when considered along with the federal government's pervasive control over the Colorado River. So the appeals court would allow the nation to proceed with its claim to enjoin the Secretary of Interior to, quote, develop a plan to secure the water needed, close quote, and to, quote, manage the Colorado River in a manner that does not interfere with such plan, close quote. At the Supreme Court, the questions presented were, first, did the appeals court correctly permit the nation to proceed with a claim to enjoin the Secretary to develop a plan to meet the nation's water needs? Or did that infringe on the Supreme Court's retained jurisdiction over the allocation of Colorado River mainstream in Arizona versus California? The second question is whether the federal government owes the Navajo Nation an affirmative, judicially enforceable fiduciary duty to assess and address the Navajo Nation's need for water from particular sources in the absence of any substantive source of law that expressly establishes such a duty. The federal government's position in arguments last Monday, as well as in its briefing, was almost single-mindedly focused on the need to find a specific trust duty that the government, quote, has accepted, close quote. The federal position is that the nation must identify a, quote, specific applicable trust creating, close quote, statute, treaty, or regulation that the government violated, relying on United States versus Jicarilla Apache Nation, a 2011 Supreme Court case relating to a breach of trust claim against the United States for damages. The nation, however, briefed and argued that Jicarilla is inapplicable to this claim, which is not for damages, but for an injunction instead. In its briefing, the SG asserts that the relevant treaties of 1849 and 1868 did not create enforceable duties to provide or secure water for the nation. Admittedly, the treaties do not mention water, but in providing for a permanent homeland, they recite the obligation of the federal government to provide seeds and agricultural implements, presumably to make the homeland viable for agriculture. In its briefing, the nation argued that such references to agriculture and a permanent homeland compel the conclusion that the United States owes an obligation to provide water to make the agriculture viable. The nation argued that the 1849 and 1868 treaties served as a promise by the federal government of sufficient water for the reservation to serve as the Navajo's permanent home. This is so, according to the nation, because of implied rights for water clarified by the court in 1908 in Winters versus the United States involving the Fort Belknap Reservation in Montana. Thus, we say Winters rights. The creation of the Fort Belknap Reservation similarly involved the creation of a permanent home and a place for farming, but did not expressly provide for water. Such rights are implied, the Supreme Court said, to fulfill the purposes of the reservation. Consequently, the Navajo Nation argued, the United States owes an enforceable fiduciary duty to a tribe when a tribe can identify a, quote, specific rights creating or duty imposing, close quote, source of law that, quote, bears the hallmarks of a conventional fiduciary relationship, close quote. Additionally, the nation disclaims any interference with the decree in Arizona versus California. The nation argued the Arizona litigation is about a fundamentally different question, quote, how much water each state has legal right to use out of the waters of the Colorado River and its tributaries, close quote. It argued that while the Navajo Nation has unquantified rights to the Colorado River, the nation's claim doesn't turn on those rights. It requires only a finding that the government has failed to secure the water it promised by treaty, no matter where the water might come from. The decree's apportionment of the mainstream Colorado waters was not at issue, the nation argued. Arizona, in the middle of all this, argues the Ninth Circuit's ruling deprives the states that are subject to the decree in Arizona versus California, what we call the law of the river, are of a full and fair hearing to consider whether the nation is entitled to water from the Colorado River. The states, along with the Western Water Associations, claim any adjudication of lower basin Colorado River water will reduce the water available to existing stakeholders and violate the Arizona versus California decree. Oral arguments saw less time spent on Arizona versus California and more time on whether there was a duty or obligation of the United States to do whatever it should to secure water for the nation. The assistant to the Solicitor General, Frederick Liu, treated water as part of the bundle of sticks in a traditional property law analysis. He argued this did not include a judicially enforceable affirmative duty to assess the tribe's water needs, develop a plan to meet them, and then carry out the plan by building water supply infrastructure on the reservation. Upon questioning from Justices Gorsuch and Kagan about the federal obligation to provide water, presumably under the two treaties, Mr. Liu acknowledged the treaties do vest water rights in the tribe, and that those rights are enforceable, including by the tribe. But he argued that the promise allegedly breached here isn't about violating those rights. It's about violating affirmative duties to supply water to the tribe. Water, he noted, was just another property interest that the tribe can use and exclude to others, but it doesn't impose on the United States new duties. Justice Thomas drilled down on this, asking whether it could be argued that providing a permanent home, the federal government is required to bring water to the land where there is no water. Mr. Liu's answer was no, there's no such obligation. Justice Alito focused on whether there were any expectations that the nation would have to the lower Colorado in 1868, the time of the second treaty. And Mr. Liu replied that there would have been no such expectation. Mr. Liu explained the federal trust obligation with respect to the water rights is the same trust obligation with respect to the land. It called it only a bare or limited trust that does not bear the hallmarks of a conventional fiduciary relationship. That then triggered substantial discussion over whether there was a fiduciary relationship under the trust relationship. Shay Dvoretsky appeared for the Navajo Nation and explained the implied right to water associated with the establishment of an Indian reservation, as decided by the court Winters versus United States, as I have discussed. Mr. Dvoretsky noted the government has acknowledged that the United States is the legal owner of all the water rights recognized for the Navajo Nation and holds those rights in trust for the Navajo Nation. And so, he noted, the United States is controlling the nation's winter rights as trustee. He pointed out the United States asserted those rights for the Navajo Nation in certain water basins, but not others, such as in the mainstream Colorado River, which is subject to the decree in Arizona versus California, where the federal government blocked the Navajos from asserting those rights for itself. Mr. Dvoretsky also sought to clarify that the nation was not seeking what the SG was implying, namely pipelines and infrastructure to deliver water to what is the western area of the reservation, presumably from the mainstream of the Colorado. The discussion went back and forth over whether this was a breach of trust case or a breach of a treaty case. The nation noted it was over a trust relationship established in part by the treaties, and whether there was a fiduciary duty of the United States to the tribe, and whether the principles of breach of contract apply, or whether there is a bare traditional trust and not a full fiduciary relationship. Additionally, the court struggled with the parties' views of whether the breacher involved a mere failure to provide access to water, or whether it involved an obligation to build pipelines and pumps and facilities. In divining where the court will go with this, no clear indicators are on the horizon. Even the justices who are textualist oriented, when looking at the text of the treaties and they see no mention of water, they still cannot ignore the longstanding body of law that implies water for a reservation under Winters and its progeny. So the text alone seems inadequate to answer these questions. Also, the more conservative judges may be concerned about the disruption to the California versus Arizona versus California decree stakeholders. That's important states and cities that depend on the main stem of the lower Colorado. Yet that concern hangs on whether there's a jurisdictional bar here, and not even the federal government presses that case hard, leaving it to the states and the Western Water Associations. Justice Thomas started the questioning on the jurisdictional question, but it is unclear if that is his principal concern. It is possible, as has been the case in Indian law cases, that Justice Barrett is the new swing vote. Justice Gorsuch has consistently opined in favor of tribes appearing before the court. If four of the more traditional conservative judges, including Chief Justice John Roberts, side with the United States, and the four more liberal-leaning justices, including newly installed Justice Jackson, side with the Navajo Nation, there's a serious question where Justice Amy Coney Barrett falls in this. In questioning the state's counsel, she referred to a concurring opinion of Judge Lee at the Court of Appeals, where the judge said essentially, this case can go forward so long as whatever happens doesn't wind up messing with the Arizona versus California decree. Further, she queried whether the federal refusal to assert the nation's winter's rights or to have them blocked could be a breach. While While there was no definitive conclusion to this discussion, it signaled Justice Barrett may be on the same wavelength as Justice Gorsuch, which could play out to a win for the nation, sending this back to allow for a refiling of the third amended complaint. Depending on what the court says, assuming it is sent back to allow for a renewed filing, that filing may have an easy time or a more difficult one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.